Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where we explore the transformative journey of reentry after incarceration. I'm your host, Venkivia Gardner. Each week, we bring you powerful interviews with experts in the field and the voices of those who have lived through the experience. Our mission is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal stories by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals. We explore the latest research, policies, and practices while also hearing firsthand accounts from those who've been impacted. Join us as we uncover the realities of reentry, challenge misconceptions, and inspire hope. Whether you're a professional working in the legal system, a family member, an advocate, or someone navigating reentry yourself, More Life the Reentry Podcast is here to inform, inspire, and ignite change. Welcome back to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where if you've been following us for the past few weeks, you will know that we have been shifting the narrative on reentry by amplifying stories of resilience, entrepreneurship, and policy change. Today, we have a special guest, Muhammad Abdul-Hadi, who is the founder of Down North Pizza, a business that is making waves not only for its food, but also for its commitment to second chances. So Mr. Muhammad has leveraged his academic background in criminal justice and his experiences as an entrepreneur to embark on a path to reimagine what a business leader's role is in supporting underserved communities. So through fair wages, innovative hiring practices, and community building, he is on a mission to help reduce recidivism rates across the city of Philadelphia and beyond. And like I said before, he's the founder of Down North Pizza, which is a mission-driven restaurant that exclusively hires formerly incarcerated individuals and serves up pies with a purpose in Philadelphia. So thank you, Mr. Muhammad, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So for our audience, if you haven't listened to our previous episodes, go back a couple weeks and listen to what we've been talking about so far, where we've really been talking about entrepreneurship. And in today's episode, we're going to dive into the story of Down North Pizza, how it started, how it's creating opportunities for formerly incarcerated individuals, and what we can learn from its model of having a justice-driven business. So to get us started in our conversation, Mr. Muhammad, do you care to tell us about the vision behind Down North Pizza? What inspired you to launch a restaurant that only employs formerly incarcerated individuals?
Sure. So honestly, when I purchased this actual building and at the end of 2014, and is located in Strawberry Mansion. For those who are not familiar with Philadelphia area, Strawberry Mansion is one of probably the most underserved communities within Philadelphia. And understanding that they have a plethora of needs, for me, I wanted to open up a business, but I also wanted to open up a business that would benefit the neighborhood as a whole. I look around and see businesses that come in, take from the neighborhood, necessarily don't put back. So I couldn't see myself actually doing that in a neighborhood like this. So for me, thinking long and hard on how I would accomplish that and navigate that is why I kind of sat on the building for a couple of years, just kind of figuring out or thinking and brainstorming what I could do. And I always wanted to open up a restaurant. Didn't have any restaurant experience, but that's something that was on my bucket list to do. So it dawned on me sometime in 2017 that, you know what, this is a food desert that we're in as well. Why don't we look at something, a creative way to kind of bring some food into Strawberry Mansion, but, you know, some food that can benefit people. I landed on pizza because the other thing was, you know, us as Blacks, you don't see us in the pizza space as much as we need to be. So that was always also an avenue I wanted to explore. And just to show the world that we can do more than what, you know, the particular food items that we focus on. And for me, understanding that I didn't have any background in restaurants or culinary, that more importantly, it was about building a team around me that could actually carry me and carry this business to the next level. Looking at the different needs that the neighborhood has with poverty, you know, you got recidivism, you got, you know, you name it, Strawberry Mansion has it. So I'm big on focus. So with this, I wanted to make sure I focused and honed in on one thing, and I honed in on, you know, recidivism and, you know, focusing on hiring individuals who have been impacted by the carceral system. Because I had experience working with them with the various different businesses that I owned prior to Bellman Pizza. I always saw their value, always saw the resilience. And for me, being somebody who has been impacted by the carceral system myself, a lot of formerly incarcerated individuals get into entrepreneurship out of survival, because for them, this is the only option, because a lot of doors are being closed because of the fact they have a criminal record. So, you know, survival is one of the reasons that drives a lot of formerly incarcerated individuals into entrepreneurship, because they need to eat, and understanding that every time they, you know, they're looking for different avenues, you know, to work with people, is sometimes the biases come into effect and they're not able to even get a chance to show what they're actually about. So understanding that part about entrepreneurship and connected to why do you see, like, you know, people who have been impacted by the carceral system going to entrepreneurship, basically a tool of survival. And for me, landing on the pizza shop, building a team around, having a focus on the mission, building this whole, you know, game plan out from 2017 to 2019, is, you know, how it came full circle. And then at the end of 2020 is when we opened up the doors to Down North Pizza.
So the doors opened officially in 2020 is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like there were a lot of different factors that went into what inspired you. If I can just reiterate some of them being your own experiences being impacted, the community. It sounds like Strawberry Mansion is what you said. A community that's been plagued with poverty, disadvantage, incarceration. And that's really, and wanting to give back. I hear a lot of people that are formerly incarcerated that own businesses. There's the survival piece of employment. We know is challenging. A lot of doors are closed, and the doors that are open are probably not the most advantageous. So it is out of survival, but there's always a social mission to them as well, in giving back to the communities where they resided or where they are currently residing in at the time.
Yeah, because it's also for, you know, a lot of them who've been incarcerated and been in these neighborhoods, that social mission aspect is also something that they veer towards, because they feel as though they played a role in the demise of the communities as well. So that part of accountability kicks in, because it's like, I can be a part of, you know, breaking this community down, whether it be, you know, violence, selling drugs, things like that. So for them, it's like, all right, I owe this to be on the other side as a reparatory justice, you know, vehicle to kind of repair some of the wrongs, to write off some of the wrongs that I myself may have, you know, partaken in. A lot of that is, you know, one of the reasons too why it's always that social mission, you know, into a lot of the work. Somebody made a lift that, you know, reached out and grabbed us and pulled us up while they were climbing. We feel a duty to have to do that and continue on that, you know, throughout our journey as well. Yeah, so, you know, like we mentioned, the accountability thing is important, I think, for individuals on their journey of, you know, rehabbing and rehabilitating themselves in their, you know, thought process around how to operate in society. So being that, you know, the give back is always incorporated. You know, when you talk to people who are coming from the carceral system and think they want to do, they're always including people within that community. Just to make sure that that part, you know, is that box is being checked, because it's very important, because, you know, we play a role in, you know, the destruction as well. So we also need to play that role within, you know, the uplifting, upbringing of these communities as well. So typically when we do things, it's always our people in mind as far as, you know, who we're servicing and trying to help, because we understand the role that we played in it.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting perspective too, of it has that accountability. So I heard two things, accountability for investing back into the communities in which maybe you've taken the opposite role in. So a way of pouring back into those communities. And then the second thing I heard too was the business is about people who may have similar experiences, been in similar situations, supporting each other, and then them supporting that community too.
Yes, that's, you know, it's a very important part because as we can see, you know, if we don't do for ourselves, you know, we see what happens when we leave it in their hands to, you know, kind of help. So it's like we feel a need to have to get out there and figure this thing out in so many different ways. So, you know, just to tie it back into like down north, pizza is like, you know, that's, you know, one of the reasons as well, because, you know, the community that needs to be built for in order for people who have been formerly incarcerated to thrive should be built by us, because we know we have similar experiences and we know like the unique set of needs that individuals who have been formerly incarcerated needs to be put on the forefront in order for businesses like this to thrive. Because resources is a big thing, and resources is a big thing across the front for any organization as a whole to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I know you mentioned earlier, you know, you opened the doors in 2020. You spent about 2017, 2019 really trying to figure it out and put the business model and framework together. And I imagine you've had several different milestones over the past couple of years now that we're in 2025. But before we get to those, can I ask you, what are some of the biggest challenges that you experienced as an entrepreneur in trying to start a business as someone who's been impacted?
The biggest challenge for me, I guess getting this off the ground, is that I was going through my own legal troubles at the time of opening up down north. I just got sentenced maybe June of 2020. And, you know, I said we opened the doors later on that year. And I ended up being on house arrest for that full year after, you know, from June 2020 to July 2021. So personally, it was a challenge for me having, you know, these restrictions placed on my life as far as what time I can be out, how long I can be out, and also trying to open up this business, you know, on the other side of town. And, you know, all of that, you know, with my personal life. So it was like having that balance and this determination to really see this through after myself has been, you know, going through the legal system simultaneously, I think was the hardest part for me, this navigating that time frame, that first year. And understanding what I couldn't do and, you know, taking advantage of the things that I could do within that time frame. And, you know, also being held accountable for things I'm responsible for, understanding that, you know, during that time, I only had 6 hours a day out of the house. So I had to make the best of that time and then rely on, you know, the team members to, you know, kind of, you know, hold it down in my absence. And, you know, having that trust and that understanding, you know, is, you know, a lot of the reason why, you know, our core group of individuals kind of stayed intact, because we all kind of came together during those challenging times and kind of, you know, put our heads down and just, you know, got the work done. And I think, you know, understanding that during my, you know, stint with the carceral system around that time, it just made it that more important for me to get this business open, because at the thought of it, when it was just an idea, I did not have a criminal record, but it still was the focus. So as I went through, you know, that and experienced it on a personal level, it impacted my life and kind of turned everything on its head. Because, you know, my whole life changed from that point out, you know, not even be able to rent an apartment, you know, a lot of my licenses that I held with the state, you know, they got suspended, you know, because, you know, once you're a felon, then, you know, certain privileges that they give you, you know, they're taking them away. So understanding of how my life in particular shifted during that time, but still, you know, having that resilience that we talk about to kind of see this thing all the way through.
Yeah. And so resilience becomes an important trait to really push through as an entrepreneur, and especially for those who are formerly incarcerated and trying to start up and make something of their experiences or their skills or, you know, their talents. And it seems like after your experience going through the carceral system and your legal experience, it really pushed you to really take this off the ground. And it seems like, and one of the questions I was going to ask you was, how did you navigate those challenges? And I think what I picked up on was you had a lot of support from your team, willing to kind of, like you said, hold it down for you and pick up when you weren't able to be there because of those restrictions.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, you're nothing without the team around you. And you know, that's why, you know, we all have that built in us, that resilience, because for, you know, some of the other guys who did longer, you know, stints in prison, you needed that to come up out of those situations. You know, we had some guys that did 20, 25 years, you know, 15 years. So you have to have that resilience. So when it can be used in a positive way, it's the same thing you're using it. You know, the same, you know, skill set you're using is just in a positive way. So we all had understanding. And, you know, I had their back, they had my back. And that's how, you know, it works. And, you know, it was a trust thing. You know, they trusted me and I trusted them as well. So we were able to get and navigate through that space collectively. And even like learning throughout my journey, just how to work in the kitchen, you know, learning from the other guys who had kitchen experience. Having that, being able to have that humility to actually learn from individuals that I employed in, you know, a department that I had no experience in, didn't know how to cook, you know, on a commercial level, didn't know how to really navigate a commercial kitchen. But, you know, same way, where, you know, I was willing to teach in certain aspects, I had to be willing to learn and learning, you know, how to run an actual kitchen.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, I've heard a couple of things here: humility, collaboration, support, you know, resilience. What else does a person with this context of their life need to really be able to start up a business and maintain that business?
The other thing is this, it has to be something that you sincerely want to do. I think that's, you know, one of the most important things, because people look around and see, you know, what the level of success that we've been able to achieve over, you know, these 5 years. But that's part and parcel to the fact that we sincerely are doing the work. And this is something sincerely that, you know, we live by. So it's not just, it's deeper than just pizza. Like, so some people, you know, may have the perception that, oh, well, I can just open a business and just do this and you'll get this. And it's like, no, because if the people around you don't feel like you're in it, right? And it's not a collective movement or community building thing, it's not going to work. And that's what I always tell individuals when they ask me about, like, this works for us. And I'm not pushing this on anybody to say, go out and do this. If it's in you, then do it, right? But some people just look at maybe the notoriety and things that come with it and maybe want to go around it and go about it that way. But I always tell them it's not going to work like that, because if you don't have the sincerity and the people that are being affected, the ones that are affected by the carceral system, they can see that. And it's like becomes, oh, a situation where they're being used as like this media ploy to kind of, you know, excel this business, knowing that the integrity is not there.
Yeah, it feels disingenuous.
Yes.
Yeah, the integrity is just not there. So really, if you are pursuing a business, something you, whether you're passionate about it or something that has meaning or purpose for you, is really is what's going to take you to the next level. Because one, you're going to want to invest in it more. You're going to want to do it more. You're going to want to learn more. You're going to want to take it to the next level versus the other alternative of doing it for the notoriety or because it's something to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, just like you said, you know, with, you know, your indirect impact of being around individuals who've been impacted by a car system, because of that is what's driving you to the work. So the sincerity is there. You have seen it firsthand, not directly, but indirectly of how it impacted. Because to your point, when somebody goes to jail, it's not just that person that's doing that bid. It's the whole family that's impacted. Everybody got to do that, whatever high years that is. So it's like people are affected in different ways just because you're not physically in there. You have to do that stretch with the individual that's in there. There's something, you know, somebody that you're close to and connected to.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great point because, you know, we often talk about people who are directly impacted and the challenges that they experience, but as someone, as you said, that's indirectly impacted, has seen several people in their community and their family, the whole family, the child, whoever else is a part of that family dynamic, it becomes disrupted. And they all take on some of the challenges, not directly, but indirectly experience some of those challenges and the hardships and the struggles when people, you never know. I always think about a lot, like Black men being taken out of the family, like finances being that, like that's finances being taken away, or whoever a caregiver is. That the pain and the hardship trickles down to the other family members as well. So definitely want to do something that's passionate and meaningful to you. And that's genuine to the people that are being impacted, whether that's indirectly or directly. So let me ask you this then. So this entire season, one thing that people, if they don't take anything away from this season, one thing they're going to take away is that employment is one of the biggest challenges that people experience when they come home. From your perspective, how do you see entrepreneurship as a solution to breaking the cycles of recidivism?
Good question. So this question was posed to me, like, if I could describe myself, like, what would I describe myself as? And I feel like when I thought about it long and hard, I'm like, I'm an economic revolutionist, right? And for me, that was the best way to kind of describe what I'm attempting to do but throughout this revolution, but it's rooted in economics because of the fact that we live in America. And like you said, one of the biggest barriers is employment. When you come home, you know, you need money to survive. You know, majority of people have families and have responsibilities. So the revolution has to be rooted in economics. So for me, understanding that, you know, people need to work, people need to be paid, a fair wage, not just paid anything just because they in dire need of a job. And also looking at other ways that they can, you know, make money outside of, you know, just what they've done on the day to day to kind of help, you know, that with that burden, especially when you're coming home, you're trying to play catch up. So one thing about individuals who come home, especially after doing a significant amount of time, it's like they feel like they have to make up for all of the years, whether it's with their kids and their family members for all the years they may have, you know, been putting money on their books and they, you know, have not been there at these key moments of their life to, you know, with them. So the number one thing is that they be feeling like that they have to catch up and they have to overcompensate. And I've seen it firsthand on so many occasions. And I always just like, you know, that time that you know, that you're trying to catch up, the time is gone. All you can do is focus on the present and the future. And, you know, trying to overcompensate can cause issues for yourself, whether it's health issues from working too hard, not getting proper sleep and things like that. So it's always a situation where I try to, you know, enlighten them on that aspect. And for me, knowing that we do live under capitalism, you know, this is the thing, right, in America. And knowing that prison is a business in itself, the whole carceral system is a business in itself. And not only is it the employment that they have barriers with, it's also the housing. It's, you know, they run hand in hand. So that's why, you know, having ownership of the building and also having apartments on top that I can offer individuals that can pay rent, right? And they don't have to worry about the discriminatory practices of landlords, because you can legally discriminate against individuals who have been previously incarcerated. And that housing aspect is sometimes one of the lead causes of recidivism, because if they only have this one place that they can go back to, it may have been a very toxic environment that they have to go back to because parole said you have to live here. And having that option, it's like, no, I can get my own space where I can have that, you know, that serenity that I need and that peace of mind that can help me, you know, just elevate my mind and be focused on what I need to focus on is something that is very, very beneficial to them. So understanding those things that are needed and understanding the unique set of needs of individuals coming home from the carceral system, that's why, for me, this journey, this revolution, so to say, that we're on, has to be rooted in economics.
Once again, great perspective. Because when we talk about challenges, those are the two we always come to, housing and employment, and they very much are tied together. So it's phenomenal to hear. I didn't know that, that you own apartments above the pizza place is what you're saying, where people who are system impacted can get housing if they need it, right? That is phenomenal. There are so many people that I've encountered just in my work, or, you know, just stories that I've heard of, you know, not having that housing really puts them in a bind, and leads to other challenges. Well, I don't have a place to stay. I don't have a job. And when we're talking about parole requirements, violations because you don't have a job, or because you're not in the housing that they said you should be, or you don't have a place to stay. It really does, in a way, set people up to go right back into the system. And that's when we continue to see that revolving door and that cycle. So it really does have to be rooted in economics and allowing people opportunity to be able to thrive financially and obtain stable housing. Because those are the basic things. Coming from a psychology perspective, I always think of like that little Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, those are the basic things that you need to be
everybody
able to. Everybody needs. And so being able to offer them that is really important to being able to helping them thrive and be successful in the way that they feel that they want to be successful in.
Yeah, and I always also want to just put the emphasis on it. Like, when I tell people that, they assume it's like some program, like, and it's like, no, because we need to get away from those words and those catchphrases of like, this is a program. No, this is employment, and this is where they live at. There's no rules. Mm-hmm. Same way you have to pay rent to anywhere, it's the same thing. So it's not like we're giving them anything. Mm-hmm. You know, this is things that, you know, we can extend that to individuals that are working at the shop that need it. You know, and mm-hmm. it's the same way they have to pay rent anywhere else, they have to pay rent here as well. So it's definitely, you know, bypassing some of the, you know, hurdles that you have to, you know, get through just to, you know, have some semblance of stability in the world. But it's not a program, because, you know, a lot of people will frame it as, oh, we got this program. And it's like, no, this is a for-profit entity. This is, you know, there's nothing program about this. This is employment. And when I tell people also that I'm not doing nothing that, you know, other organizations other large organizations do. Like, when you talk about, like, say Amazon and Apple, it's like, when they want people to work, what do? They'll relocate them. They'll pay for their housing. They'll put, you know, give them resources, right? When they feel as though these individuals are of value and they want them a part of their company. I'm just, you know, I'm not doing anything different, but I'm just on a smaller scale. So when people think about it, it's like, oh, the way I'm doing this is a little different. But every employer understands that resources are the biggest thing that they need to provide their employees with in order for them to retain them, and then, or in order for you to create this environment, because you at the top are in control of whatever environment that you want to create. Mm-hmm. And if it's, that's a thriving community that you want to have where people feel a part of something, that's the environment I choose to create. So where it's not, where people that are a part of Down North Pizza, they feel like they're part of Down North Pizza. And it's not a situation where they're just sitting back and making me money. This is a situation where they're benefiting off of everything that we're doing moving forward. The same way that, you know, we move as a unit, but it's things that we have to do down north. And we also do things together outside of, you know, Down North Pizza. All of the guys who work here, their stories are included in the book as well. So it's not just a thing where it's centered in myself. It's centered in the community that we were able to build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I just love. Food is one part of it, and it's great pizza, you all. I've been there a couple times when I go to Philadelphia. I always make sure I stop by. But it's really about, like, changing lives, like providing support beyond just a paycheck, and creating community, and just creating a space where people with shared experience can come and be a part of something that is bigger than themselves. And, Yeah, it's about changing lives. And if we can do that for these individuals, we're doing so much.
Yeah, and then also the inspirational aspect that we're able to inspire and put the work of individuals who they claim can't get it right or can't come together and do things, we put down the forefront that that's false. Because out of 4 years, nobody went back to jail. The whole entire, a lot of us are, on parole, probation, and things like that. I myself, I'm still on probation. And all of these potential barriers are in our way. And we have that support amongst each other. And we understand that we have something to live for. Like, everybody feels like this is a part of them, right? And that's something that, they understand that we are representing, each other when we're outside of, the restaurant and things like that. So it's an understanding. So we're actually showing and inspiring others too, not to necessarily, even individuals who come home, they're inspired because this being able to see something like this happen, not necessarily like they want to come work at a pizza shop, but they just are inspired because it's like, this is what is needed on the forefront, like something that they can, say they are part of, not directly, but indirectly, because they are, one third of America who has been impacted by the carceral system. So when they see things like that, it's inspiring to them to want to go out and do something, right? Mm-hmm. And be a part of the solution, not the problem.
Yeah. Yes, definitely on the individual level. And then I also think about, like, I think you briefly alluded to this, zooming out a little bit. This is how we reshape narratives. This is how we change perceptions. Because like you said, a lot of people think these are people that have gotten it wrong. They don't know what to do. They're just going to go back in. They have these already predisposed ideas. But when we have opportunities like Down North Pizza, who are offering, like I said, beyond just the paycheck and support, and knowing that resources is really what people need to be able to turn their lives around and be successful, this is how we reshape narratives. This is how we get a full picture of what somebody's life is like and understand their context, and one, how we can better support. So I really do appreciate it. And like I said, I love the mission, love the pizza too, but I really do love the work.
Everybody needs resources. When people get hired at any job, right? What's the number one thing? What's the resource package? What's the, the healthy, like all of these other resources.
What are the benefits?
The benefits, right? So everybody needs resources. So that's what people need to understand, that nobody, when people choose where they want to go, it's, yes, the pay is the driver, but they're also looking at the other things around that. Like, what are the other resources that you're offering us that we need in order to, whether it's transportation support, whether it's, benefits packages, whether it's life insurance, like all of these resources that are needed for people to feel comfortable so they can come in and thrive within whatever they're doing, because they know that these boxes are checked. So we may have a different set of resources that we need, like, because we provide also pro bono legal work for individuals who work at Down North who may need it, right? Because that's another type of resource that maybe somebody else wouldn't need, but maybe we need because of our situations, and we need a mouthpiece because, like I said, a lot of us are still on parole, probation, and things like that. So that's a resource, mm-hmm. And that's something that they can pick up and call if they haven't, an issue. They can say, this is happening in XYZ, so we can, they can reach out and have a mouthpiece, and then, we can get past and move on. So everybody needs resources in some way, shape, or form to thrive in society. So we understand that, and we understand that we may need it. We have a unique set of needs that we may need, and that's what we're tailoring Down North, our community around, provide resources that are necessary for us to thrive in society.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this too then, because I'm a policy girl. And I don't know if this is your world or not, so it's absolutely fine if it's not. How do you think policies should shift to better support formerly incarcerated individuals, whether they're entrepreneurs or just if they've been system impacted in general?
It definitely should, because it's that out there that supports what happens when they have resources around them in far as recidivism. But I think sometimes the problem is that it's a tug and pull, because, as the carceral system is big business. Right. So we can't, you know, they have to have some semblance of balance because they need to feed the beast. Right. So it's like, I think that's the struggle when it comes to like policy. It's like, all right, they can't empty the jails in their minds. Right. Because it's like from a business standpoint. And that's, you know, we would love that, like, because we know that these jails don't work. Right. And studies show that. So, you know, when it comes to the policy push, I think they know the things that are benefit. They know the things that, you know, will make, you know, will have, you know, individuals coming out their situation and thrive, right? They know that currently jail is not rehabilitating anybody, right? They see models around the world that, you know, actually come from a rehabilitative, you know, infrastructure, but understanding that those particular societies don't thrive on incarcerating people. So that's why that model works for them and it would never work over here. So it comes down to reshaping the idea how we look at rehabilitation. And right now it's more in a punitive light of just punish and less on a rehabilitative, because, you know, it's big money in prisons, then also the parole and then all the other, you know, things that go along with somebody committing a crime. So it boils down to it's money and crime, right? It's money in Strawberry Mansion being the way that it is right now, right? That's very profitable for somebody, even though they're the inhabitants of the area are not profiting at all, right? So it's so much that goes into like the policy and all the other stuff. And me, you know, I understand it. That's not, you know, particularly my lane as far as that political sphere, because we on our own political journey and what we're doing here. But understanding that as a collective, that is somebody's role. And then we do support people who that is their focus, because like I said in the beginning, I'm big on focus. So if my focus is on the economic aspect, and then, you know, we work with organizations of people who focuses the policy and pushing, you know, being in those courtrooms and stuff, we all have a role to play, because I'm only a small shop in North Philly. Even though our voices can be heard, we understand that we need to work with people on this bigger journey to accomplish what we want to accomplish.
I think that's a very important piece, is we all play a role. And right now your role and the role that you take on is economics and pushing for economic advantage. And some, it may be somebody else's role to do, you know, the policy work and push for change there. Collaboration, definitely support, advocacy, but we all definitely have a role in just figuring out what that is for you. Is important in finding your space of where you'll be involved in. Yeah, I always and I definitely understand that. Of, you know, prison is a business, and without it, certain people wouldn't make their money. And if their goal is,
the economy as a whole will be crippled.
Yeah,
if,
right.
You know, being frank, you know, because, you know, it's the third largest employer, I think, in the United States. So it's like the economy will literally be crippled without that infrastructure. So it's like, you know, understanding that from that perspective, because I think the biggest thing is understanding it first and then figuring out how you can navigate and make impact. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to not understanding that this is a business and then try to approach it and make impact. If you don't understand it, then it's hard to navigate the space and make any impact if you don't understand how it's been designed and how it's working and things like that.
No, absolutely. And to hear you say, you know, the economy would be crippled, really just shows like how embedded like incarceration is in our history. And how reliant people are on it. And it's really unfortunate to hear that.
What happened when slavery ended, right? Economy wise, it was crippled, right? And that's, mm-hmm. you know, incarceration is an extension of slavery. So mm-hmm. we already know what would happen, right?
Yeah.
And even worse now, because we didn't have all of the different tentacles back then when it was slavery. We didn't have lawyers, judges, POs, COs, all this other infrastructure in place that's interconnected to the carceral system that's creating jobs in these rural communities where prisons are at and things like that. So it'd actually be worse than it was back, you know, when, mm-hmm. you know, the South suffered from the lack of free labor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's definitely, I know we could probably spend all day there. But I'm not gonna let us do that, because there is something that I want us to talk about. I know recently you just had a big announcement, a release, a new recipe book. Can you talk to us a little bit about what inspired you for this project and how it aligns with your mission for Down North Pizza?
Yeah, so We the Pizza is a memoir with some recipes in it. I want to say, because, you know, for everybody out there that's kind of, you know, wondering what that, you know, what that looks like, it's a multi-layered, like, book where it literally has something for, you know, every reader to go in there and kind of pick apart. I feel like you know, with that book, you have to read it maybe like four or five times, because each time is for a different reason. Maybe just the cook, but then maybe just for the stories. We also have the through line throughout the book that kind of paints the picture of the evolution of the carceral system from slavery. Amazing pictures in the book, the photography in it. It's from a lens of North Philadelphia. So you get the whole entire feel of where we at, where we reside at, through the photography, because pictures tell stories. And then, you know, hearing about our journey on an individual basis. And for me, the inspiration was Down North is more than just pizza. So in writing a book about Down North, you can't just have a book about pizza, because it doesn't tell the full story. So that's why the story is being told through the recipes. The story is being told through the photography. The stories are being told on a firsthand account through individuals who are employed at Down North Pizza. And it gives the reader the sense of what we have going on here. Even if you've never met, you know, been to Down North Pizza, you can kind of get a feel of what this business is about. So the inspiration behind wanting to do this is to want to tell the story in a true, authentic way of how things operate and what we're about at Down North Pizza. And that was the inspiration, because I felt that it was our job to tell a story. And we wanted to tell it through our lens. And that's what We the Pizza is about.
Yeah, really important point that you hit on there at the end of making sure the people who have the lived experience are definitely the ones telling the stories and being able to contribute in the space. I know it's, if you go in a lot of different states, reentries, people are doing stuff all over the U.S. But it's really important to have formerly incarcerated people in the space. And that sounds like what the book is about, being able to share you all's personal stories, personal journeys, give people some really dope recipes to be able to cook, but also to be able to learn about what you said earlier, the having that understanding of mass incarceration and how it has plagued people's lives and the impact it has had on them from the time they were arrested to the time they are released. So that definitely a great, great way to tell a story. Definitely a great way to tell a story and give people understanding.
Yeah, and it literally gives you the full reason of why there's a need for a business like Down North Pizza to exist. How do we get to the point in society that we need a business to focus on hiring individuals who have been formerly incarcerated? We answer the why in the book.
So that means y'all got to read it.
Don't have to go
figure out the why and learn about it.
You can start a business with your interest.
So,
here are 10 business ideas.
How can our listeners support the book, the business, or even the movement?
One, become an
event planner. So, you know, the book is wherever books are available, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, local bookstores.
Three,
and another way that people can support the movement, of course, coming to the shop. If you're local or you're traveling, come to Philly. You definitely stop in Philly, make sure you come to Down North Pizza.
Six.
We also have a foundation set up, the Down North Foundation, where a lot of our philanthropic endeavors, a lot of our community-based
start a mobile car wash and detailing business.
Happen through the foundation. We have different initiatives that we built out with the community in mind.
Nine.
We do a lot of work inside of the prisons.
Use your skills to start a graphic design business.
Juvenile prisons. We have culinary classes that
become
we teach.
Become a seamstress the or chef a tailor.
Is a chef.
These are all ideas that are still profitable in the business industry.
Facilities.
And don't have to become the next $1 million.
His lived experience of being through the juvenile system is very important to have that relatability. We also teach horticulture inside of the juvenile prison. Equip them with skills of how to garden and farm. While they're there, because a lot of them will get out, and just teaching them different various skills that they can have in their tool belt, you know, and if they want to get out, you know, they have, you know, some experience in that, in those things. So, you know, we're doing a lot of work on the foundation side and, you know, understanding that we play a key role in a lot of the, you know, initiatives that we actually built out were out of necessity of what the community at large needed. So we've been able to get partners and funding to, you know, fund a lot of these initiatives that we were building out. So, you know, downnorthfoundation.org, you can go on, you can learn about the foundation, you know, support in those ways. Of course, buy a pizza, buy a cookbook, because we feel as though we have a duty, you know, where, you know, whether you're supporting or whether you know, getting something and taking something tangible away, we feel as though we have to provide, you know, we don't just want to say, Give us. You know, we want to be able to provide something in return. So, you know, the proceeds from the book, you know, go towards the foundation. You know, the profits from the book will go towards the foundation and things like that. So we want to give some people a tangible thing if they're supporting us that they'd be able to walk away with.
Absolutely. So I will make sure I put all the information in the description box where you can access the book. Like you said, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, if you got Amazon Prime, you probably can get it in 2 days. Yeah. And then I'll put the foundation in the description box as well so people can access it there. I do have to ask you, what is your favorite recipe in the book?
The PSK. That's a vegan pizza. If anybody know anything about vegan pizzas, it's hard. But we cracked the code on the vegan pie. And I think everybody enjoy. That's my favorite.
Okay. I'll have to try that one the next time I come to Philly then. Okay. Well, look, before we wrap up, I want to ask if there's one piece of advice you'd leave with our listeners, whether they are formerly incarcerated, business owners, or just people who want to help shift and make changes in the system, what would it be?
It's one of my quotes. It's also in the book. That hope is an action, not a feeling. And what that means to me is that we have to actively be hoping through actions and doing the work as opposed to just feeling hopeless. So, you know, that's what we're doing. We're using hope as the action and showing people what that looks like.
Absolutely. I really like that. I think I'm going to take that and hold that for myself too. I like that. Well, thank you, Mr. Muhammad, for joining us today to not just share your own story and the work that you've done, but to talk about how you're changing lives through food and offering opportunity for people who are formerly incarcerated. I do really appreciate our conversation, and I look forward to coming to Philly again so I could stop by. So thank you for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. And, you know, let us know when you're pulling up and we'll be there. And, you know, we'd be there, you know, have some great pizza, some, you know, conversation.
Absolutely. Well, look, to all of our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share this with someone who needs to hear it. Make sure you follow Down North Pizza on social media. I'll put them in the description box. You all do have social media, right? Yes, I don't think I asked, but I'll put it in the description box. Support the recipe book, buy it online, and then follow More Life The Reentry Podcast on Instagram for more stories like this. Thank you. And this is More Life The Reentry Podcast signing off. Were you inspired by today's story? If so, find you a mentor, attend a networking event, or explore the tools and resources shared. Don't wait. Take action to connect with those who can help guide you on your entrepreneurial path. If you're ready to start your entrepreneurial journey, check out the resources in the episode description for resources on mentorship, business development tools, and a host of other resources. These resources will help you take the first step. If you are considering becoming an entrepreneur, I highly encourage you to check out the Geo Reentry Connect link in our description box. This resource will provide you with information on what is needed to start a business, as well as resources to assist you with starting a business. Be sure to click those links below. Thank you for listening to this episode on More Life, the Reentry Podcast. Be sure to come back next week to learn more. Before we end today, I want to give a huge thank you to the More Life, the Reentry Podcast team in helping with the development and production of this episode. Thank you. If you are interested in joining our team, please fill out the form in the description box. If you want to share your story, please fill out the form in the description box. We thank you for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week.